I realized, Gabe, I apologize. I went a few minutes over the hawk time. So, sorry. I'll be more mindful about that next time.
I was party to it as well. So.
Ah, there you go. So, I want to make a few comments quickly just on the general Poshe HaKemazik theory that we were discussing that I had at the end of the Mekor Rashi. I think it's a pretty high-powered theory, right? This notion of viewing harm, nezek, not as consisting in the collision of molecules, but you view harm as consisting in the risk exposure that's created by the Pshia. Everybody on board for that discussion? Thanks, Yakir. You have to, in case someone's listening to the recording, they have to feel like they missed out on something by not being here in person. So, anybody have thoughts just on the main theory that I was suggesting in the last Chabura? It really is a resurrection of a theory that some of us spoke about in Bava Kamma days. So everybody good? Everybody feel like they have traction on the Poshe HaKemazik theory? Okay, good. So, I just want to point you to a few things very briefly. If you look at the Nosei Kelim on the Rambam, in this Behema Shehaisa Roa, parts of Nichmasa Besados of Ikramim Rambam, which I thought was a good proof to this theory. If you look at the Nosei Kelim, so like the Ravid says, for example, if the animals didn't cause actual harm, then you can't preemptively shech them or preemptively seize them. He says, for example, Mishi Yeshlo Eder Shel Behemos Ein Shochtin Lo Kol Edro Ela Im Yazik Lo Olam Yishalim. Meaning, yeah, you don't have any like preemptive self-help remedy to prevent the nezek, to prevent the physical harm. Just you have a right to ex post facto compensation. So, part of this could be about whether the Ravid buys into this theory of Poshe HaKemazik. Part of this could be about primary duties versus secondary duties that we've discussed in the past. So just when you think about torts, when you think about Nezek, does it make sense that you have a primary remedy to a primary, that the Mazik has a primary duty not to harm, and then just a secondary duty of compensation? Or do you think that, no, like even just the primary duty is to compensate when harm occurs? So you see the Ravid here seems perfectly comfortable conceptualizing things as im yazik lo olam yishalem, but there's no ex ante right of self-defense to prevent the nezek from occurring. And then you can see the Kesef Mishnah is also upset at the Rambam. He says, umasha kasav afa pisha lo hizika en yodea minayim lo. And the Rambam thinks that you have this ex ante right to stop the animals even before the nezek occurs. He's skeptical. He doesn't know where the Rambam gets that idea from. So my explanation for the Rambam is that there's already a shame nezek from the imposition of risk from the trespassing animals. Okay, everybody good with that Rambam discussion? One further source on the Rambam that's just worthwhile being aware of is the Evan Azel. Rabbi Zalman here, I think if you read this passage carefully, he characterizes the Rambam's view as follows. Yesh la'ayin, de'imneima de'vimasha hasu shlosha pamim chashu ha'behema omeid bebari lahazik. Okay. Imkein ha'hechi de'omeid lahaziko bevadai muter la'abailam lishmores mamonam milios niza. So the question that I have here about this formulation is he speaking loosely to get at what I'm getting at, or is he speaking precisely to get at, I think, what Yoni was suggesting last time, that it's the expectation of Nezek that generates the self-help, the preemptive self-help right, not any present shame Nezek based off risk exposure, right? So his formulation is, that sounds future tense. And again, so So it's a right to prevent your property from being nezeked, as opposed to a present right based off the fact that he was mazik you through the risk exposure. I just don't know if anybody has thought. Cole, you have a thought on this, it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, I guess here's what I, let me tell you what I care about for this discussion. Like, I care about whether the shame mazik doesn't bother me so much. I guess it should bother me from an iser perspective. But what matters to me is whether you have avenues for remedy, self-help, or procedural ones through a court that are short of compensation. And if the answer is yes, then I think I've learned what I need to know about whether he's a mazik or not. So it seems like, yeah, sure, risk exposure on the part of a would-be mazik or mazik constitutes a release of certain protections that your property would normally have against different kinds of interference, right? So if your dog is running at my sheep and about to eat it, I can shoot your dog.
Your point is to focus less on the semantic.
Yeah, I would focus on
substantive legal doctrine.
Like what's the cash value of the shame mazik? Okay, iser, fine, I agree. But I think the real, within the kind of the non-Torah specific cash value of the shame mazik is going to be what avenues for remedy are available. Yeah.
Good, yeah. So you're saying, the important, either way, the shame nezek is ambiguous between the normative risk exposure and the physical collision of atoms.
Right.
So it's on the significant legal nafkamina rather than on the words that's used. That is
where I'm at.
Great. Okay, good. So I want to round out with, we spoke about these other sources. I wanted to throw out two other quick discussions for just everyone to chew over and weigh in on whether they think it's relevant to this analysis, the main theory about Poshea Kimazik. So I added on the discussion of Kimle Bishat, whether you say Kimle Bajabamine based off the moment of Shia or based off when the physical harm occurs. We saw Shlomo Zalman about this last time. There's a Imre Moshe in Siman Lamed. So if anybody knows the Imre Moshe, is Moshe Sokolovsky. He's considered to be one of the big Talmidim Mufakim of Reb Chaim in Brisk. So he says some lumdish, pretty lumdish things throughout the Sefer. Here he has an interesting comment. In Siman Lamed, he says, he's talking about Nezek. He says, What happens when you're chofer a bor b'rishus harabim on Shabbos? Are you chayav for the niske abor? Under the same question that Shlomo Zalman was asking about kimle b'jamine, right? Is the maisa chafira sabor, which I'm going to view as the pshia, is that the significant moment where we say, oh, that's the maisa nezek, and that's the crucial moment for kimle, or is it the shas nefila labor, which would be relevant? So his formulation here, I think, could be taken two ways. So he says, Fizeh chofer bor b'shabes, pater al niske avor, blah, blah, blah. And he says, the reason is, d'ikar haptur d'kimle b'javamine, srichin lodun al shas hamaisa, she'asa hadavar hamechaivo mamon. Okay. He's saying, the crucial time is, the action that generated the chiyuv mamon. Af debisha sheba hachiyuv mamon, az ein mechuyev misa. See, the language is confusing here. What is he trying to draw a distinction between the act versus the chalos chiyuv? So what does he mean by ba hachiyuv mamon? What's that category? Versus Hamaisa She'asa. See, In my view, they're actually. Go ahead, Adin.
Sorry. I think it's just the fact that Hebrew only, that the word mechaivo and chiyuv are the same. Like in English, we have different words for that. We have the obligating incident and the liability, like the obligating incident and the onset of liability or something like that. Whereas maybe that's, but like here, it's like, cause it's really the mechaiv is the digging, but there's the actual chiyuv happens at like, which like does make it sound weird and like confusing, I think.
Right, well, this like what I read. So we're trying to figure out, you know, when we speak about the shame nezek or the maisa nezek, is it the moment of shia that's really relevant, or when cash value is given to how much you have to pay, right? Like when the scope of the duty of repair is given content. And you can see here, he says, "Uchimo hacha chover b'shabbes de'af de'bishah she'bah hachiv mamon haynu be'eshe nafal lebor leka kimle b'jav minei aval kivan de'bishas maisa hamichayvaso avur hanezek haynu be'eshe chafar b'shabbes." So he wants to say that surely when you dig the pit, the maisa hamechayvaso is kimle b'jav minei eligible because it's the same time as the chiyav misa of Shabbos. But he says the chiyav is ba b'shas b'shal that the person falls into the board. So do you guys think that this helps my case about poshia kemazik, or is he just focusing on some separate consideration of like? Like, so he's just like an action person. Kimle b'dramine is like, when did you do the action? Rather than the morally significant moment when you're considered to be a mazik. You see, he doesn't really capture the poshea kemazik thing that I'm trying to put my finger on. And I guess the question is, it depends how we understand his maisa hamachayvaso versus bishah shabah hanezek. Maybe he's not taking a stand on this question at all. So it's curious to hear your thoughts. Cole, you have a thought on this? That?
No.
Bekir, you have a thought on this?
Yeah, I'm going to put myself in the he's not taking a stand on your point question camp.
Maybe because he's just a maisa. He's just interested in maisa.
Yeah, I mean that seems pretty clear from what he says. I don't think that. I would also, and in the strong formulation of the poshea kemazik theories, the time when the nezek actually occurs might not even be called shashib hachiyav mamon. Again, it's not 100% clear what that means, but he does seem to think there's some significance to both times, and it doesn't seem like he's saying that one time is more significant than the other.
Right. Like the way I would put it is that the shas nefila labor is how we figure out the measure of damages. That's all it is.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Which doesn't seem to exactly fit his formulation.
That's a good point. Good. Adin, you had a thought on this before we move on?
I agree with the idea that I think he's, because this is a case where Bor is clearly defined as Nezek, and we're just trying to. It seems like he's working under the assumption, which is at least for most types of nezek, that there needs to be a ma'aseh, like big up, like if there's liability for damage, there must have been an action that prompted that liability. And with Bor, there really is only one. The action only takes place b'shas chafira, but it doesn't say anything about whether we define. Where our question is: do we define X as nezek? Not once we've defined X as Nezek, what action are you responsible for?
Right. He's going to see a Maisa person. Ooh, we have a hand from a dark screen. Adam. Hey, Adam.
Shalom.
Aleichem Ashalom, how are you?
I've been trying to put on my Shabbat here. Well, my second word, it's particularly interesting your wife, because there is really, you can't hear me?
Start again. Yeah, just start again. You're a garbled for a second there.
I'm taking myself Wi-Fi. Here, just going to do, okay. Am I audible?
Perfectly.
Okay. Borah directly is a particularly interesting case. Just made in the fact that your chiyuv really doesn't stand from Maisa, it stands from your achrayos. That's why we draw the comparison between chametz and bor.
Yeah, like the artificial assignment of ownership. Oh, we were makayim.
Exactly.
We were makayim shloshim yom kodem achag. It's great.
Yeah. We can even bring up the whole Rav Chaim about it being like a shtickle mai, you know.
But yeah, you pondered us from having to learn, Pesach. I agree. Bor could be a special type of case where the everything is upfront in the mice of creating the bor. That's why it's interesting. And the artificial assignment of ownership is also complicates things. So I agree. Yeah, I don't want to get too mired in bor questions, and we should be mindful of them. But you're right that complicates using these examples as paradigms for the Poshea Kimazek theory. But yeah, I would just say having these achronim with the nafgamina of kimle bedrabamina, even if they're not saying the mahalach, is a good way of creating a nafgamina for the Poshea Kimazek theory, even if it's not what they're explicitly advocating. Gabe?
Yeah, just to flesh out a slightly broader point, when we apply the Poshea Kimazek theory to Nezikin, it's more than just defining the value of the Nezik. We're also defining the recipient of the Nezik and like the object of the Nezik. Like there's so much that is undefined b'shas p'shia. Whereas in Shomer's case, like we know exactly what you were in Shomer. So you can use like this language of kamei b'rishusei, or he schrib tashlumin, or he takes on bailus of the animal b'shas p'shia. But when we're in an Ezekian framework, it's like much more ambiguous, just like what he's even who he's chayav to and what he's chayav on b'shas p'shia.
It's an interesting point. I'll just say I thought Zachariah's comment on Thursday, I thought spoke to this issue, which was when you're poshea, you're poshea towards somebody, right? There's like there's a victim, like whose rights were breached or whom you exposed to an undue amount of risk, or you imposed unreasonable amount of risk on him. So I think there is a specified victim. Like when you text and drive, like it's the drivers around you in your vicinity that you are poshea towards. And I thought that was an important way of distinguishing the poshea kimazek theory from just the general ishmira, like view in the achronim. Like ishmira doesn't have a victim. Like there's nobody who is wronged. Whereas in the poshea kimazek thing, I think you're poshea towards like people's property, towards people through the risk that you impose on them. So in a bor case, right, it's the normal passerbys that you risked by creating the bor. That's how I would view it. Even though the particular one to whom you owe the duty of repair will only be persisified or known once they suffer some sort of material loss by the risk that you created. So I want to say the Shemazik is Mishas Pshia. The victim, the potential Nizak, the Nizaks are there in Mishas Pshia. Whether anybody has an actionable claim to recover damages, that's going to be just a function of whether like you owe some repair to them based off your Pshia. And if they weren't harmed, if they didn't lose any material possessions, then there's no duty, there's no repair to be claimed.
Right. Yeah. So I accept that. Yakir and I were handling a little bit the mechanisms suggested.
I don't understand that word handling. I read this article about not using Jewish terms, and maybe you should be a little more inclusive and so that everybody can understand what you're saying.
I'm just trying to make sure Cole feels like we're proper yeshiva, but we're actively excluding the right.
I believe in shop talk in specialist context. It's totally fine.
Okay, you have the green light from Cole to handle.
I should have made that point explicit.
Yeah, these fine distinctions are above me. But the mechanism suggests in our Mikveh and Rav Hanan about how exactly the chiyuv works, but like what's happening in Shas Shia. So there's like a shibud which is happening. There's a chov which is incurred. So I think like as soon as you get more specific about what the mechanism is, it's going to be harder to say like some of the vague things which you just said, like, oh, you're high up to everybody. Because like, you're not going to say that every single person, every passerby's object, future tense when you dig a bore is kamei v'shusei until the nezek happens, and then you pay up for it later. Like that mechanism doesn't really check out.
You think why? It's too metaphysically complex? It's... Why can't
it feels absurd.
I mean, why can't, like, I mean, we all know that the, risk is like a very complicated type of thing. We don't see it in the air. Maybe it's like a quantum mechanical wave, like, I don't know, maybe it's like a wave function, you know, who, like, maybe, like, you need something to trigger it, and, like, until, like, there's a knees, like, but why can't there be, like, risks, you know, everywhere? And look at that, Evan's like showing us his, there you go,
physical. My quantum mechanics book.
That's right. So I'm saying, I don't think it's extravagant to think that there are many victims of your risk, a small subset of whom only get to bring actionable cases to Bezin. So like the Nafkamina and the Rambam's case, right? When you have the wild animals running around, right, so they impose risk on all the local field owners. It may be the case that only one of those field owners will have an ex post facto claim in Beis Din for compensation. But I think if we talk about a shame nizak in the sense that I'm using nezek for poshea kemazik, I think it's right to say that there are all these nizaks out there. Right? And maybe each one of them has a preemptive right to shech the animals and stop them. Even though the litigation will only involve like one party ultimately, where like the function material, like the risk actually materializes into material loss for him.
I accept your answer. I'm not sure that's true in the Rambam. I think the Rambam says that the person whose field was trespassed has the right to kill
Itamar.
Well, let's just look back at the Rambam for a second. The Rambam is just giving you, I guess, like a simplified case. Behema shahaisa roa o parsha v'nichnasa bisados uvekramim masrin bebaila shlosha pamim yesh rishus lebal hasada. So, like, I'll just say, like, the bal hasada here is like bale hasada, right? It's the abstract guy who is the recipient of the risk. Doesn't have to pick out a unique individual. Like, it's not Shlomi who has the, sorry, Cole Solomon.
You know, the thing, you know, I have to say, I know, because I'm a clairvoyant, that the next time your father is doing a Q&A, all the yeshivish he uses, he's going to like, look at me and impishly smile and like translate it, and it's the sort of subtle dig, you know. That he,
you're assuming he's actually going to read your piece, Cole.
I'm sure he's already read it.
Maybe. All right, but let's.
Wait, I had a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's my question. What about? I'm trying to. So I'm. So Itamar, you've been proposing a model on which the imposition of risk is itself maybe a form of damage. And what I want to know is, so there's one avenue to which is that you can pursue, which is preventatively stopping the thing from happening. But that's a kind of self-defense against a particular moment. What about a case in which you have to incur costs in order to stave off, like, like have to build a fence or something like that, where there's no, there's this kind of like ambient risk, okay, that, I don't know, somebody's cows who are out pasturing are gonna eat your corn or whatever it is. And like, they don't do it, but they might. And it's reasonable to think that they might. And in order to protect your property, you have to build a fence, which is that
It's a whole, it's a whole interesting discussion. That's more of like a distributive question of like, how do we distribute like the burden?
Yeah. So that's what I'm at. That's what I'm asking. Does that kind of, is that, yeah.
There's a whole rich discussion I have here. If you look in the Frankel Rambam.
Sure. It comes up in Tshuvas. Okay, fine.
Yeah. But if you look in the Mafteach on Hey Aleph, in this Kei Mamon. So there's like a whole discussion in the Afronim about like Ala Mizak Laharkik and like Ala Mizak to build a getter.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay.
Yeah. So definitely look there. Like, it's a little far afield for like this analysis, but definitely worthwhile looking into it.
Right.
Good. Let me just add, I want to say one, I should add one more thing about the Rambam. You see, the Rambam in Hey Aleph here, I know this is like a theme we've touched on earlier in this Zman. About rights and duties. Is that right? I think we spoke about this in Zchus Achilas Poel. No, didn't we talk about this? Like a distinction between rights and duties in halacha. Is it a duty on the Baal HaBayis to make the stuff available, make the food available for the Poel, or is it a right that the Poel has? Somebody remember this discussion? Does this sound familiar? Yeah, okay. Everyone else looks like this is like brand new. This, we got into like the cover discussion about cover saying that Allah only has duties, no rights, right? So this Rambam is interesting because he says, Yesh Rishus Labal Hasada Lishkodosa. It's just an interesting point that this generates, there's a clear, Rambam is saying there's a clear Hofeldian liberty right generated by the trespassing animal. So in this type of relationship, there's a rishus, there's a clear license that the Baal HaBayis, the Baal HaSadeh could exercise and that he holds against the Baal HaSadeh.
I'm not sure it's a liberty right, Itamar.
I think it's a liberty right because it's,
I think it's a permission.
A liberty right is a permission. A claim right is a liberty right is just a permission.
It's a
license.
Oh, meaning he has, okay, license, I like. Because the point is, I'm not sure somebody else,
there's no correlative duty.
No, I'm right. I guess the question I'm asking is there a, does the halacha recognize permission to protect?
Yeah, well, that's what you see here, right? It's like another, you can see Professor Zalman in that discussion. In the Evan Ozel, he connects it to Ovid and Justina Lanafshe. He thinks that the Rambam here might be working with him.
What about a third party is what I'm asking.
That's an interesting question, yeah.
Okay.
We'd have to look into that more in the Ovid.
Because I have to say, I'm not even sure it's a per, like, is it a liberty right that you have, or are you acting as like an officer of the court almost at that point?
Well, you're asking, can a third party kill the animal?
I'm asking two questions at once. It actually seems to me fairly intuitive that if you see somebody's animal about to like gore somebody else's animal and you're a third party, like you have the right to, like that person has a general right against harm. So it strikes me that people have a general right to protect, like usually you have a right to protect other people's rights. That's pretty intuitive, but now I'm thinking here, maybe this is really a second order, this isn't a liberty right, maybe you're like almost acting as an officer of the court.
It could be, yeah. That's like a whole chakira that's like a nesivus about this and Avedi Nishtin L'Nafshe. I think it's better to stay focused on the Poshe Kimazik.
Okay, fine. Can you send around that nesivus though? I want to read it.
Yeah. Send it around. Okay. The last two items here that I just wanted to call to your attention and really get your feedback on whether you think this is relevant to the Poshea Kimazik discussion is the Ramban's view on contributory negligence, Shia Dinizak. So this came up in Tosfos, but this is really the Bava Kamma discussion about what happens when we say Adam Muad Le'olam. So he should be strictly liable for any nezek that he causes. But the nizak is somehow posheya, right? The nizak acts negligently. The victim basically contributes to his own harm through being negligent. So does that vitiate the liability of the mazik who would otherwise be liable through adam muad le'olam, right? So this is those famous discussions, two examples in the Gemara, the beam carrier and the jug carrier. The jug carrier is first. He stops short. The beam carrier walks right into him. Haya bala chavis rishon, bala kora achron, nishbra chavis bekora, imamad bala chavis pater. So this is like a, this is supposed to be a problem for the adam mur liolam people. Why is the beam carrier pater? He's a mazik, right? He walked into the jug carrier. And then the famous Yushalmi case about two people who are sleeping. One person's already there. The second guy lies down next to him. And then the first guy rolls over and harms him. So the first guy who harms him, who rolls over in his sleep, is Potter, according to Yushalmi, because Zesha ba lishan eslo hu amuad. And of course, Tosa says, what happened to Adam Muad Le'olam, right? The guy who is sleeping and physically rolled over onto the second guy and harmed him, he should be liable under the theory of strict liability. Everybody remember these cases? These are like the classic cases. Okay. So Tosos has a view about this. And Tosos says, you know, he creates the whole doctrine that Adam Mur Violam is only for an Anos Kain. It's Adam Mur Violam doesn't apply in a case of Ones Gamor. That's Tosos' theory for these cases. The Ramban disagrees. And the Ramban articulates the doctrine of Pshia Demiza. So he says over here, Tosus understands these cases about the Mamazik, Vimkein Lama Patrula Dibri Omra Onis, blah, blah, blah. And Tosus said, Eino Chai Beonsin Gedolin. That was Tosus' theory. The Ramban says that's wrong because these cases are Pater, not because of a lack of a basis to be Mechayev the Mazik, but rather because Desheni Pasha Ba'atzmo. And again, over here, he talks about the case of Balakor Rishon. He says, Kulam Kshem Adam Amazik, Mishum Shia Denizak Patru Behem. The reason why you're Pater is because the victim acted negligently. And I think what I want to know is, this is not a theory of liability. This is a theory of defenses, a defense from liability. And so do you think that this doctrine of Pshia Denizak as a defense against liability for Mazik, does this relate to the question of Poshea Kemazik at all? Everybody see the question? So there's this intuitive sense where you'll say, oh, look, Pshia is really important here, right? If the Nizak is Poshea Be'atzmo, that's like a sufficient reason to get the mazik off the hook. So who's negligent or negligence imposing a risk on yourself plays a very important role. But does this weigh in on the question of who's like the mazik, right? Or what, in what does nezek consist? So Adam, you have a hand on this, and then Zolt.
Right, so I would think, looking back at the classic cases of the guy carrying the barrel, the guy carrying the poles, when the guy carrying the barrel
stops... Let me just say, add one more. Tosus Reid has the same formulation. He says, when do we say, Adam Muad Le'olam, bedelo pasha nizak anafshe? Aval hecha de pasha nizak anafshe, blah, 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 we're not going to say Adam Muad Le'olam, right? So the mazik's off the hook when there's pshia ba'atzmo of the nizak. Similar formulation. Go ahead, Adam.
Right, so within those formulations, there's a general understanding of risk that we could think about. So far, we've been formulating risk overall as external risks that you pose to other people, externalities as they be called in the economics. But generally, within at least financial within financial theory, risks are always internal. It's the risk that you're taking on. So in each of these cases, you could be that when the guy with the barrel is stopping, he's now imposing new risks upon himself. So the financial liability of the previous guy is now going to be that less the financial risks now taken up upon the guy carrying the barrels.
Yeah. So I think that's a nice way of putting it. Your formulation, Adam, I think helps, is almost like a way of saying, Hosheake Mazik, who's the Mazik here? The Mazik is really the Niza. It's like self-imposed Nezek.
Exactly. Which is, I think in all these cases, is exactly what's happening. Right? All this is self-owned. Even when you're causing to, in a practical case, it's self-owned externalities. Yeah, like you're creating the cost of someone else falling into your thing. You're creating a cost upon them. It's your own risk.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way of putting it. So putting it your way, I think this does help with the Hosheake Mazik theory. You guys agree with Adam's formulation? Zolt, you're going to weigh in?
Well, I think it depends a little bit on like what you think Hosheake Mazik is. Like, I think if you take the, I guess, more traditional Hosheake Mazik theory, being that like in some ways you're higher for Pshia, even though like the Nezik only occurs later, somehow like that the action of negligence, you know, to begin with led to a future Nezik, and that, you know, because of the future cause, future action, like that, you know, we're going to attribute it to you. From like original negligence, which I think is more, so that like perspective is a more traditional approach, I think, to Hosheake Mazik. And I think there you could make some argument that this might relate to it. But I think the argument that you've presented for a while, that Hosheake Mazik is not about attributing future damages to you now, but rather is about the fact that Nezek is actually about exposure to risk, even in the present, before the damage has actually occurred. So I think that this doesn't take a stance on it. This is kind of something kind of separate.
Meaning you think this doesn't take a stand on it, even if you're risking yourself in a certain way? You don't think that's...
Well, you're not risking yourself. You're actually doing... I mean, it's like you're actually doing the Nezek yourself in some ways. Like, it's... Like, I don't think it changes. If anything, like, it's not clear why it should be true that it obviates, like, the Nezek. Like, if the problem of Hosheake Mazik is that I'm exposing you to risk, then it shouldn't matter whether or not, like, you, what you do, like, either way you should be high of for exposing.
Well, again, the counter argument is that it's like the Basar Meikara question, that like when the Nizak exposes himself to risk, like, we'll view that as a more relevant, like, Izak Anafshe, than an externally an external imposition of risk, right? Just like which one is like a closer to the harm. So like, yeah, it's the Nizox is closer.
And so, right, though, we talked about this last Chabur about the case of the, you know, the case, the guy who throws the pitcher off the roof and then someone else snatches it.
Exactly. So the Basar Meikara discussion.
Yeah, but there we don't talk. But there, like, we don't talk about the guy who actually ends up breaking it, who actually certainly is like the closer cause, the more, you know, more proximate cause to the damage as being high. We talk about the person who threw the roof, the Kli off the roof, being high.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about the relationship between those two things. It's interesting. It's an interesting point. Yeah, I'll just say, look here at the Shulchan Aruch's formulation and Tav Kaf Aleph on these cases. This is like the sleeping case. Shulchan Aruch says, "Miniach kela b'tzad hayoshen v'nishapech aleihem v'shvaran u'shavram patur shezeh sheinicham b'tzedo posheyahu v'mah sheinicham b'tzedo." Like, they're characterizing the reason for liability based off the second guy. The second guy is the one who's considered to be Hosheya. So, yeah. All right, fine. I don't want to go much deeper into these examples here, but anybody have follow-up discussions on these last examples that support or don't support the Hosheake Mazik theory? No? Gabe, sounds good to you? What do you think of the contributory negligence case? Does that sound good to you, or you're with Zolti on this?
I'm not convinced that it fits in, but I'm open to it.
Okay, good. That's all I can ask for, you know? Give me your ear and your open mind. So. I'll just mention one other thing here, because I have it on the Makoro sheet. And there's some cost since I put it on. I should just mention it quickly. But I'll be super quick. So two quick things you might want to think about. When it comes to Aish, there's a discussion in the Achronim whether it makes sense to hold somebody liable for Pshia Be'esh, even if they did no action. So you can see here, Tosa says, if you hold Esho Mishim Chitzav, so he says, Lo Sheyavir Ba'atmo Esh, El Kol Makom She Pasha V'lo Shamar Gachalaso Chitzav Ninhu. So you don't have to be the person who lit the fire to be liable. It's sufficient for you to be liable that you were Poshea in the Shmir of the fire. And the Minchas Chinuch takes this a little further and he says, well, he's pretty explicit about this, fleshing out that doctrine of Tosos. Kol makom shepasha v'lo shamar gachalasa afilu lo hidlika eish ba'atzma chayiv mishum chitza. I guess there's not such a chiddush here, but the idea is that in a lot of cases, you're liable without any mice in Ezek, without even bilos on the Nezek, just solely for the kind of pshia that you had with the Nezek. So, yeah, just think about that case, about the extent that you could do away with a mice in Ezek altogether if you have pshia as a sufficient condition. Okay, so now we turn back to our main discussion of Tchilas Pshia Sof Bones. And what I want to do now is to flesh out the different views in the Rishonim about the relationship between the Tchilas Pshia and the Sof Bones. So let's start with the Ritva and the Tosabina Peretz on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. This is on page 3 in the source sheet. So the Gemara gave us the case of the animal that wasn't watched properly. The door of the barn wasn't locked properly. That's Pshia Legabe Ganavim and Zevim, Rashi said. The animal ran out and ultimately it seemed to have died of some sort of heart attack. Right? It was Mesa Kedarka, the Gemara said. So Abaye said that you're a chayiv, havla de agma ktala. Rava said you're pater, because mal hamaves mali hacha mali hasan. Yes? Good. So what are the Rishonim bothered by? So what's this Ritva and Tosabina Peretz? What's keeping them awake in this sugya? Yakir, did you get a chance to see the Ritva? Shmuel saw it. Great.
Yeah, I mean, the way I understood these Rishonim, including the Rif and Tosos, was just like what specifically the Pshia was on. How connected the Pshia was to the actual onus in the end.
We'll see that. That's for sure. Tosos is consideration. That's Tosabina Peretz also. That's an important part that we're going to get to in a second. Before we get there, I'm curious about, like, what's the issue that they have with Shita Sabaye? I think it's a pretty interesting observation.
Yeah. What's the specific danger level of Hevla Da'agam? Is Abaye describing just like a certain death? There's just toxic waste there that'll like pretty much certainly die. And if so, why does seemingly everyone would agree you don't even have to have a pshia, just it being there in itself as a pshia?
Yeah, or to put it a little differently, our Gemara makes it sound like it's a case of tchilas pshia sofa bones, and Abaye thinks you're chayiv for sofa bones because of this argument of havla da'agma ktala. Now, that's a problem because if Havla Da'agma is a real factor in the death, then it's Sofa B'Pshia also. Like it's not plus of Pshia Sofa bonus. This is one big Pshia, right? We know that there's a risk factor for the bad air of the swamp killing the animal. So why does the Gemara characterize that even as Mesa Kedarka? Right? It died Bipshias Ha Shomer. But so the initial act of leaving the barn door open was a Pshia with respect to Havla Dagma. So Tosa says, and Ritva says also, my irium of Nesha Pasha above Yatza Meila, Filu Holicho Hu Bikifu Chomashel Barzel, Nami Echayev, Imamida Ba'agam, the Ha Pasha, like Abi Havla. If Havla is a real risk factor, then even if you were holding the thing on a chain leash in the swamp and you went for a walk and it died there, you should be Chayev under a theory of Poshea. So what's Abaye's category where we view this as a mechayev with respect to tchilas of pshia sofa bonas, but it wouldn't be a sufficient mechayev of pshia on its own. Do you see that? Does everybody see the issue here? Okay. So what's Tosus's answer? And this is, let's say, the Ritva's answer to this problem.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Zacharia. You got it, Zacharia. It's yours. Go.
Sure. So, just taking it aside. So, if it's here to the Havla D'Agam, lo shchiach, dekata l'chiyuvile. It's not so common. Ela deheka de pasher l'gabe mili achrini, talinan ba kol midi, ba fil milsa de lo shchiacha, kim de efshar de mayis klal machmasei. So, where you're initially negligent, then with regards to every other factor, we kind of, we are told that we hang it on any possibility, since it could have possibly died from the Hevla D'Agam.
Yeah, I think this is like an extraordinarily interesting doctrine, right? So the Ritva starts off conceding the point that Hevla D'Agam is not a real risk factor. It's lo shchiach dekata l'chiyuvele. On its own, we would never think that the Hevel of the Agam killed it, right? So like if you took the animal there for a walk, and it died, the coroner's report would not say that Hevel of the Agam is like a potential cause of death. Right? Does everybody see that? But once the Shomer's Poshea, then we're going to like lower the threshold for what we're willing to view as a risk factor or a cause of death in order to try to connect the dots back to his pshia. Ready? That's like a remarkable theory, right? I think Zachar, you're right. Hecha de pashal gabe mili achrini talinan ba kol midi v'afilu milsa de lo shchicha even the afshar demayis klal machmasei. Now, what do you make of that formulation? So Shmuel, what do you think of that formulation?
I mean, seeing it through, after seeing the riff, I think maybe I did this out of order just because the way it got added. It's not so wild because I think it was the riff who seemed to say like it's sort of a chain reaction. So because you were Poshea originally, it led to this in some way, shape, or form.
But he can't mean that in a... like in just like a in a theory of causation sense. You can't mean that just as like a true description of the causal chain, because he concedes the point, the Ritva here concedes the point that it's unlikely that the Hevel of the Agam is the cause in fact, right?
It's unlikely, but if you weren't Poshea at all, then I don't know.
I don't think the Pshia raises it. I think this Ritva concedes that the original Pshia does not raise the probability of Havla D'Agam as a risk factor. Right? So the fact of your Pshia does not make the Hevel of the Agam more lethal to the animal. And I think we all acknowledge that point. So the haraya, even if you were to walk the animal to the agam and it died there, we wouldn't say that's posheya because you exposed it to the bad fumes. So it's, I don't think it's right to say that the initial pshia elevates hevel as a risk, or it doesn't make it more lethal or more dangerous. So what's happening then?
So is this like the breach of contract idea that we had last Tuesday?
Maybe this is good support for Zachariah and Noah's idea that, well, yeah, for that idea. So explain that idea, Shmuel, like what you think it amounts to.
So once that he has Pshia, then he's liable to anything that comes after it. Once he wasn't guarding it in the way that the original owner expected him to guard it, no matter whether it's related or not, no matter whether he calls the molecules or not, ultimately that falls on him.
Yeah, that's right. Meaning, I don't know if I think this, I don't know if this fits specifically into the breach of contract, but it is very close to that notion, where the idea is like, once you're poshea, then we're going to do the legwork to make you liable for things that you would otherwise not be liable for, right? That's clearly what's going on here, right? So we're even going to lower the threshold for what constitutes a risk factor solely for the purpose of holding you liable for your pshia. Right, Shmuel? Yeah, so I think that's exactly right. Zilt, do you have a hand on this? But I just want to know, like, what's the reason for this? Like, why would we suddenly pile on liability into the, you know, onto the shomer if without the pshia we wouldn't view these events as contributing to the animal's death? So Zilt, do you have a hand on this?
Yeah, I'm kind of like wondering, like, how much is his svara based on, like, we're not going to be mechayev? How much is it like that we're attributing pshia to him and like we're adding on based on later? And how much of it is it that we're just not going to be mechayev him otherwise? And I'm thinking in terms of kind of akin to, you know, there might be certain laws that, like, the, you know, the government won't prosecute you for every single thing you do wrong. But, like, you know, if you're accused for first-degree murder, then they're going to add on second-degree murder and accessory to murder and third-degree murder. They're going to add on all the other things once they're already accusing you once. So it could be, like, I'm just reading what it says, like, the Adigam Moshiach, the Kati Lechayuvi Alei. Like, what Lechayuvi Alei, does that imply, like, it's just, like, the focus is on, like, the Chayuvim, that we're not going to Mechayiv you? Because it's, like, because it's so infrequent, because, like, you know, we're not, there's, like, no need to be, make a knaf, there's no need to penalize people or to be overly vigilant about these type of things. Or is he saying something closer to what you guys have been arguing, which is that it's really about somehow like the actual chiyuv has changed?
Yeah, that's a great, it's an interesting point. So the way I would say, I hear what you're saying, I would say that you could read the Ritva as saying, once there's a basis for holding you liable, like, we'll pull out all the stops. But we're not going to pull out those stops if, like, we don't have any clear independent reason for holding you liable. Is that what you're saying, Zolt? It's like...
Yeah, I mean, the question is a little bit like...
Once there's a cheskas chiyuv, then we could, like, go all the way with being mechayev you. Whereas, like, if there's no cheskas chiyuv, then we're...
That's above a comma principle, isn't it? If two people are jointly liable for... Ooh, Itamar, this supports your poshea kamazik view. If two people are jointly liable for damage and one of them can't be reached for compensation, the second one has to cover the whole thing. That's a good raya.
Well, why is that a raya per se for poshea kamazik?
Well... because the extent of the physical harm doesn't exhaust the culpability, the liability.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a good thing for disentangling the duty of repair.
That is
an important part of the big theory. That's right. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, you were going to respond. So is that what you're getting at here?
Yeah, I think in analyzing this ritva, like, the question to me is, is he suggesting that in theory you are chayev, even for you know, this type of pshia, but we're just not going to be chayev you. We're not going to bring it to court, stated in, like, a very, you know, crude terms. Or is he saying that, no, you're actually not high of, unless like it's in conjunction with other things, in which case it becomes like an add-on.
Right. So which is the rule, which is the exception? Is the rule that, in general, is it that no basis to hold somebody liable for havla d'agma? Or we'll just give them the benefit of the doubt to like look away. Is that what you're saying, Zolt, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not about, I don't know if it's like the rule versus the exception. It's more just a question of like, is this a discussion about like the chiyuvim and like a purely like formal legal sense of like what like judicially we're gonna actually penalize you for, or is this like a discussion about like what type of pshia you're actually chayav, what type of withhems or not?
It's interesting. Like, could you even read this as like a type of knas? Right, Talina in here is like a procedural knas, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you have to read it as knas, but that's why I gave my analogy of like the, you know, accessory to murder. Like, we're not necessarily gonna, you know, charge every single person, you know, every single time they commit a crime, even if it is illegal. But once we're already going to like, you know, once we're already bringing the court over like, you know, first degree murder, then we're gonna add on all the other, you know, potential like accusations.
Yeah, I hear that. It's an interesting point. Anybody have thoughts on Zolt's analysis here? You see, I would read this as, you know, supporting the Poshea Kemazik theory, at least in the sense that it's like, once you have a shame nezek through your pshia, you know, then we're willing to, like, you breached, like, there's a chiyuv here, and we're going to be much more like, everything else is just a question of like how we, how like filling out the content of your chiyuv, like how much you're chayav for. And so we have a lower standard for doing that than for determining whether in fact you are chayav or not. Do you see that? So there's, but when he says here in the beginning, in this part, dehavla da'agam lo shkiach dekata l'chiyuvi alei, that means in order to get a chiyuv off the ground, this is not sufficient. Like, if there's no, this can't take you from pater to chayiv. But once you're poshea, and there's, right, so poshea kemazik, then we want to figure out, like, the scope of your chayiv, the measure, the amount of your chayiv. So then, talina bakol midi, that we can to fill out the content of how much you're liable to pay. But the thing that the havla d'agam can't do is that it can't generate a chiyuv on its own. So to see that, that's how I would read this ritva. How's that sound? Does that sound good? Yakir, how's it sound to you?
Yeah, sounds pretty good.
Okay. Zolt, how does it sound to you?
Yeah, it's plausible. I think it's certainly could fit.
I'm on a roll here. Sahari, how does it sound to you?
I'm with Zolt.
Okay. Just to be clear, when you say your result, you mean it sounds pretty good. Let the record reflect that he put his thumb up. We were at this. I was sitting on this dim tour yesterday, and the lawyer was trying to get something out of the. And she's like, do you answer? I saw you nodded your head in the affirmative, but you didn't answer yes. Can you state yes for the record? So he's like hemming and hawing. And he's like, well, you know, yes, but, you know, she, blah, 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 blah. And the lawyer's like, no. I want the record to reflect for the record. And then, you know, one of those times, like, you don't have to say yes if the answer is not yes. So another lawyer screams out on that team, like, let the record reflect that he nodded his head up and down in answering the question initially.
So, how did the Din Torah turn out?
I don't know. We could talk, it's can't talk about it now.
Oh, okay. All right.
So yeah, I think that's one way of reading this ritva. It really comes from this Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, who's bothered by similar considerations. And let's just look at this part. At the end, and we'll come back to the first part of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz in a moment. So here's the Vikasha. Kivan de tam tuvhu, Datam Tovu, the Havodagma Ktala, once you buy the argument that the fumes of the swamp could be a cause of death, Imkain, my iria yatsas lagam, afilo holicha nami v'shamra v'tov mizevim chayev kim the Havodagma Ktala. And here he says, v'yishlam, right, haisvar the Havodagma lo shchicha, she tamas v'shvil Havodagma, v'yim kain, hecha de lo pasha ba mitchila, lo aminan haisvar the Havla Ktala. Kivan de ein zeshchicha. Aval, yatsas memel lagam de meikara pasha ba, halinan kol reyesa de ika limitli. Bahava kula pshiusa, mishum hachi chayev. So what do you guys make of this formulation? I think it's very similar to the Ritva.
Do you scroll up, put the whole thing on the screen?
Try this part or here.
Can you just push down the Rabbeinu Peretz?
Try to go down a little bit?
No, just enter,
you want me to change up pagination?
At least for now, yeah.
What do you think? I mean, very similar formulation. I don't think it's materially different. Let's look back here at the Ritva for a second. Talinan ba kol midi, afila milso de lo shchicha, kiven d'afshar. Same here. He does add that it's kula pshiusa. That what's going on here basically is we're going to interpret the entire event as pshia, given that there's some antecedent breach of Shmira. I mean, given the initial Pshia, we're going to lower our threshold for what constitutes Pshia all the way through. So normally Havodagma would not be considered Pshia, but since there's Pshia b'dimeikara, then Talinan kol reisa d'ika limitli, and we'll view the entire thing as being Shia. Go ahead, Zakaria.
I find this a little difficult because we're not confident in what actually happened. We don't really know the cause of death. And we're trying to categorize, the cause of death was a Shia. It's like, well, we're not even sure what it was. How can we say that it's Kula Shia? I don't know, it's not clicking for me.
So imagine, I think what's going on here is he's saying, look, What's the threshold for pshia normally? So you have to expose the thing to at least a 50% chance of dying. That's pshia. Havodagma is like a 10% chance of dying. So if you just are pushed out with respect to Havodagma, that's not pshia. It doesn't cross the threshold of negligence. But suppose you're pushed out to Meikara. You left the barn door open and you expose it to a 60% chance of dying at the hand of wolves. Now, we'll lower our threshold for what constitutes pshia to 5%. Right? So suddenly now, given like the lower legal standard that we apply for defining pshia, Havladagma constitutes pshia in this type of a case. But you need the pshia de meikara to lower the legal standard from 50% to 5%. I think that's what's going on here, right? He's just saying the threshold for what constitutes pshia changes whether we're dealing with a pshia de meikara or whether we're dealing with no antecedent pshia. And to my mind, one way of saying this is that once you're bechezkas chiyuv for the pshia de meikara, we are willing to pile on or raise the scope of liability in light of that. Shmuel, you had a comment on this?
Yeah. So how is this lowering the threshold idea consistent with the risk exposure idea? Because the risk exposure idea assumes that there's a constant threshold. It just you put it past a certain point. No.
Well, I would say that the significant thing is that there was some. There's some material significance. What you see in these Rishonim is that there's real moral or legal significance to the initial Pshia. You see, it's not just that, we now associate the cause and fact as having come about through your Pshia. That is a move that some Rishonim are going to make, right? Like Tosos will say that, and like the Tosin that you mentioned earlier. Right, or like the Rif Shita within Reva. The initial Pshia makes it more likely that the Ones will occur. It's very clear that these Rishonim are thinking differently. They're thinking that the wrongdoing of the initial Pshia, or the Chiv of the initial Pshia, is sufficient to change the legal standards for subsequent events. And to my mind, that points to some crucial Mechayev, or some crucial Chiyuv Nezek having occurred at the original Pshia. You see that, Shmuel?
Yeah, I mean, just intuitively, I find sort of the threshold, sort of the changing idea difficult. Is it possible that instead of like looking forwards as we've been looking to through this whole Sogia, they're looking backwards, i.e., so the animal died. Now let's see what led to that sequence of events. So if he was doing everything according to what the original owner wanted, we can't pin it on him. But if he did anything just slightly out of the ordinary, we can pin it on him. And that way everything's consistent. There is no idea of sort of a changing level.
It has to be, right? So for example, as you said, every way that acting the way the owner wanted, well, is the owner okay with your exposing it to Havla D'Agma? So if you didn't do any other Pshia, then yes. But if you did other Pshia, then no.
So, right, I guess I need to be more clear on that. But so fine, you took it on a walk on this iron leash. So as far as everyone is concerned, seemingly you did everything right. That was back in the Ritzvah. Seemingly you did everything right, so it would be hard to pin Pshia on you, but then all of a sudden you let it out of the barn, so there is Pshia and we can pin that on you looking backwards.
Yeah, but I it's hard to see why one Pshia should be relevant to another Pshia, right? So like, what does the Pshia of letting it out of the barn have to do with the Havla D'Agma if Havla D'Agma is not considered a risk? So My point is that clearly this Tosos is assuming that there's some crucial threshold that's crossed by the initial Pshia that allows us to operate within a Cheskas Chiyuv, or like fill out the content of the damages, which is a distinct issue from determining whether or not there is a basis for Chiyuv. So just to be more precise about it, is I would say that what the initial Pshia is doing is determining that you are liable, right? You risk the object, you're a mazik, you're chayiv. Now, how much are you chayiv for? That's almost like an amount of damages question, not are you chayiv question, right? So it's like there's the conviction and then there's the sentencing. The conviction is whether the jury finds you guilty. The sentencing is how long are you going to sit in prison for it. So just take a similar paradigm here. So the initial Pshia is that you're chayiv. With respect to being found guilty or being found chayiv, Havla D'Agma is not a sufficient mechayiv, right? But once we have an independent chayiv, then we can figure out, well, how much are you responsible for? And then for that later question, the sentencing question, Havla D'Agma is considered a sufficient. It's a legally sufficient enough type of thing to go into the damages question, even if it's not going to determine the chiyuv question. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think that's the cleanest way to articulate my position. Gabe, you have a hand on this?
This might be obvious, but in your position, we could obviously go one step further and remove any requirement for TLIA. There doesn't need to be a dependent relationship necessary to initiate.
Yeah. So I would just say that you're right. I think the issue is that you still want some link between the Shia. Like you want some like why is this collision of atoms, why does that fall within the scope of my responsibility? Right, that's the, so you could say like I was saying before, oh, once there's a basis for chiyuv pshia, you're chayev no matter what happens to the thing, right? Which is like a shlichus yad v'pikadon paradigm. Once you're shaleach yad, just we kanas you and we hold you strictly liable for anything. This formulation of Tosos and the Ritva is a nice middle ground, where once you're chayev, we'll hold you chayev for anything that could reasonably flow from your pshia or be related to your pshia. So we do want a connection between the defendant and the loss, but we're okay with a much lower type of connection than we would normally require absent the initial chiyuv based on pshia. Thoughts, Gabe?
Yeah, I think that's right. And like the more extreme position is hard to, like, let's imagine a case where the animal broke out, you let the animal out of the gate, it goes to the lake and then comes back, you lock it up again and then it dies, right?
Yeah. So
you consider that like a function of your pshia, can we link that back to you? Like we have to have some limits and I understand the need to be able to.
Yeah, it's like the term of art that the Mefarshim uses, it's kolsa le pshiaso, right? Like, once you lock it back up in the barn, like the pshia is closed, like there's no longer any pshia. So you might say this tlia business is like a way to avoid that type of a problem. 100%, I agree. So let me just say, like, and it's an interesting point. The Tosfos Bein HaPeretz himself seems to go much further, right? The lav davka yatsa slaagam, v'hu adin yatsa mibeso v'holchal lebeso shebesofa ir. Let's say your animal ran away from your city house in Philadelphia and it took refuge in your house in the Poconos, right? So the animal ran away from one house to the next house, but then it dies in the Pocono house. Ein hachanami dechayu. Why? Because there's initial pshia, the animal ran away. And even though it's mesa kedarka, we'll say, like we're even going to go, like, if there's an argument to be made that like the weather conditions or the air quality is different between the places, we'll be told of that on as a kind of pshia also, right? He says the standard is you know, is this the kind of thing that would have registered as like a risk, right, or a possibility? If so, then once there's a pshia demei kara, we're willing to view this as falling within the scope of your chiyuv. Everybody see that? So it's nothing special about agams, right? The Tosfos Bein HaPeretz extends it even from like one bias to the next bias, so long as if you would have had a havamina that there's something, the heating in the other house isn't as good as the heating in this house, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, let me add one point before we close for today, and that's this Rashba. We saw this Rashba earlier. This Rashba is within Shitas Rava, but I think this is a good way of maybe disentangling the Zecharia Noah theory about, oh, once you're Poshea, it's like Ukme Rachmana Bershuste Lagamri from the more like Poshea Kemazik analysis. So the Rashba commenting on Malach HaMagas Mali Hocha Mali Hossam, which is Rava's reason for pottering Tchilas V'Pshiyas of Ronis, in this case of the Agam. So the Rashba wants to know, a Shoel who's Chayav for Onsen should be potter then if if this type of ones occurs. If it's a mal chamaves mali hacha mali hasam type of ones, a shoel should also be potter. So even though a shoel is chayav for onsen, if the animal gets a sudden heart attack that can't really be toled or nitla on the pshia of the shomer, doesn't seem right that a shoel should be liable for it. Everybody see that? So the shoel the chayiv the mesa kedarka, why don't we say malach amavas mali hacha would have died in the mashiel's property? Mishum de kivan shekol hanah shelo ukma rachmana birshusei legamri kiilu hishelo. So we saw this just when we spoke about like the ownership paradigm of liability of shomer. So to my mind, this is really interesting because this is like the shlichas yad v'pikadon model. Ukmei rachmana birshusei legamri kiilu hishelo. That is a stronger type of liability than the tchilasa b'pshia sofa b'ones type of liability that we get in our sugya for Abaye, which requires a tliya.
This is for Rava, no?
Yeah, this is for Rava, 100%.
No, so I was saying it's not a problem. I was only suggesting that for Abaye. Of course Rava doesn't hold the ukma b'rishusei because he thinks there's tons of ones in your punter for. It's only Abaye who thinks you're chai for any possible onus that occurs. You have ukma b'rishusei.
You're saying it for your theory.
Yeah, as in this is just, obviously Rava would have a more mitigated view. You won't go full shlichus yad.
Yeah, I'm not disproving your theory. I'm just saying that there's a difference between, so it's interesting. So the way I'm reading this is that this is different from Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz's characterization and the Ritva's characterization of Abaye. Right? They're saying that it's kol tliya she'efshar litlos if it's havale lasuge adaite. That's the kind of ones that will hold you liable for in tchilas v'pshia. That's a different level than a pure shoel chayav onsen, where we say, oh, it's ukmer rachmana b'rishusei legamri kiilu hishelo, where you'd be strictly liable for anything that happens, regardless of whether we can make a tliya to say that it's yours. And what I'm trying to tease out with that is that the shlich, I think the Rashba's point is closer to a shlichus yad. Once you're shalech yad, then we treat it as yours, you're going to be accountable come what may. I think Abaye's position within Tosos, Sabrina Peretz, and the Rashba, and the Ritva is a little more delicate, and it says, it's not, oh, you were poshea, now it's yours, you're stuck with anything. That would be the shlichus yad paradigm. We're not saying that. Instead, we're saying, I don't know, we're going to lower the threshold for what constitutes pshia once there's a pshia d'mei kara. Does that make sense, Skaria?
Let the record show that I was nodding my head.
Ah, excellent. Great. So, Gabe, you have a comment on this? So we'll give you the last... Sounds good?
I withdraw my comment.
Okay. So the plan, so sorry that, sorry for spending a little more time on the main idea of Poshea Kemazik. So what I want to do on Thursday is to just nail down those shitas of Tosfos that Shmuel was talking about, the Ones Ba Machmas HaPshia discussion that we have in Tosfos, in the sense of the original Mice HaPshia increasing the probability of the ones occurring. That's the doctrine of ones ba machmas apshia. So I want to look at the machlokas, the riff, and Tosos about that. That's what we'll cover on Thursday. Great. Shkayach, everyone. Great. Thanks for the good discussion.
Sure.
See you all then. Take care.